Hello, welcome to the audio presentation of Calculating the Cloud, Determining the True Costs of Hosting Servers in the Cloud. My name is Adam Goldstein. I'm the IT Security Engineer with Dartmouth College. I also work with a group here called the Dartmouth Cybersecurity Initiative, or CSI. The research for this came out of a project from that CSI group. The CSI was started in 2004 as a collaborative initiative between faculty, staff, and students, and it's focused on research projects aimed at improving the security of college information systems. We were doing a fair amount of research in cloud computing. Specifically, we were looking at infrastructure as a service offerings, such as those offered by Amazon or Rackspace, in which customers can host servers or storage in the cloud and kind of use them on an as-needed basis. As part of that research into the security of those offerings, we realized that the cost benefit or the cost value of those offerings was a major driver for schools looking to move servers and services into the cloud. So in order to kind of assess the risk that these offerings might pose, we wanted to understand the cost and the value of hosting servers in the cloud. So the project morphed into a look into determining metrics that might assist administrators in assessing the value of these offerings. Now, certainly for institutions, there's considerable appeal for hosting servers and storing data in the cloud. They're low cost, they're easy to use, they're highly scalable. They require very minimal infrastructure needs. The pay-for-use approach can be very attractive for services that may not need to run all the time. But as our research figured out, there are other limitations to these offerings, security concerns being a top one, and I'll certainly address some of those. But bandwidth limitations, there's legal issues, concerns about service availability, and all these need to be assessed when looking at the infrastructure as a service offerings. So as part of this study, in the end, what we were able to pull together is two useful decision-making tools. A decision tree, which consists of a number of questions which quickly allow IT administrators to determine whether a server might be an eligible candidate for an IaaS offering. And also then a set of cloud metrics for those servers that might be good candidates for the cloud. We developed a series of metrics, certainly for Dartmouth, but probably also useful for other institutions that address things like bandwidth, storage capacity, processing power, and usage patterns that can help IT staff determine whether it's more cost effective to host a server in the cloud or it might be better to keep it in-house. So talking about looking at the decision tree questions first, we really kind of approach this is just a quick way to kind of assess a system or assess the server to see, is this something that might be useful hosting in the cloud? The way we've arranged the questions is that if you answer yes to any of the questions, then that means that it might not be a good candidate, that an administrator should reconsider whether that server should be hosted in the cloud. So question number one addresses the security concerns. Does the server house, transmit, or process sensitive data such as personally identifiable information, protected health information, institutional or personal financial records, academic records, sensitive intellectual property or research data? Based on our findings from the initial research that the CSI did, we identified a number of security issues which suggest that, you know, these infrastructure as a service offerings may not be a great place or it may not be a good idea to house or process sensitive data. Some of the examples of these concerns that we came up with were there's really limited auditing capabilities. Customers can't access many of the functions needed for thorough auditing as they would if the server was in-house. You know, we don't have access to all the logs that you would have on a server. You can't necessarily see all the traffic or other types of ways that you might want to record usage or administration of the servers, because it's being hosted somewhere else and ultimately being administered, on someone else's hardware, you're limited in what you can do there. And customer agreements with these offerings also typically prevent certain types of auditing, such as vulnerability testing and web application assessments. Again, if you have an application that's housing or processing a lot of sensitive data, that's typically part of the auditing process, is to be able to do vulnerability analysis or web application analysis, and those customer agreements prevent that. Another security concern we identified was that there really are limited network security controls. Most of these infrastructure as a service servers are not protected by hardware firewalls or intrusion prevention systems, and they really require those controls to be implemented at the server level. If it's in your data center or you're keeping it in-house, you're typically going to have those network firewalls or be able to use intrusion prevention systems. We did a fair amount of testing with these offerings and launched attacks and did a variety of things to determine whether there were intrusion prevention systems or firewalls in place. And we found that they were open. As the service bills itself, it allows administrators to run the applications that they want to run, so they don't put those kinds of controls in place. So if you're running a system that houses sensitive data, though, you want those controls in place, so it's something to consider. And kind of one of the other major examples of a security concern that we identified is the reliance on a web-based administrative console. So with most of these offerings, they typically have a web portal that administrators log into, usually only protected by a username and password that allows them to control their server instances and storage instances that are running in the cloud. Acquisition of that username and password by a third party or an attacker would basically give them access to all your systems, all the systems that are running in the cloud. So again, that's a web-based applications and username and password available to anyone on the internet is probably not the level of control or security that you would really want for servers that are housing or processing sensitive data. So that's question one on the decision tree. The next question follows kind of along that same path, and that is the server running a mission-critical application or service? Again, reviewing the customer agreements of the popular offerings, the team discovered that providers have very limited liability in the event of outages. They pretty much indicate in the agreements that if there's an outage, they're not liable or really responsible. Furthermore, the providers also have in their agreements stipulations where they can suspend or terminate hosted servers if they are under attack, whether or not it is the customer's fault. So if your system becomes under attack, again, you're not controlling the network ingress points into those servers. If someone decides to attack you, you can't, as if it were in your own data center, you could maybe do things to keep your system up and mitigate the attack. In this scenario, they can just shut you down. And the potential for a denial of service by someone simply, scanning your system or launching an attack against your system and having the hosting provider, bring it down is certainly a cause for concern for any system that's running a mission-critical application or service. The next question kind of gets at some of the limitations, the technical limitations of hosting servers and storage in the cloud. And that is, does the server require large and frequent uploads? As all the traffic between an institution's network and an IaaS provider is going over the internet, upload speeds are going to be slower than as if they were going from on campus into your data center. They're going over your internet connection, so you're typically going to have less bandwidth than if it was crossing your network core. Providers offer methods for one-time uploads of large data sets. But there's an extra fee associated with that, and it's not a very timely process. And actually what you do is send them a drive or send them some media, and they will upload it one time. But if your system has a need for frequent and large uploads, it's data that's changing a lot, it's large data sets, that's really going to hinder the usability and the value of hosting a server in the cloud. Some of the next questions are kind of, again, limitations of the nature of hosting servers in the cloud. Are you running a system where the operating system is not supported? You have a legacy system or a customized or some kind of uncommon operating system that you're using. Not all of them, not all operating systems are supported, and some of those distributions may not work in the cloud. Another consideration is, are there software licensing issues which could prevent a server from running in the cloud? Some commercial applications, will use software licenses based on an institution's IP address. We certainly have some of those here at the college. And if you're running a system in the cloud, you're going to be using their IP address space, and it may be difficult to work with the software license or the software vendors to kind of have your licenses reflect that. Some licenses require some type of USB dongle to be connected to the server. So if you're running systems with those kind of license needs, they're going to be difficult or impossible to configure on IaaS servers. Another question which we considered was, are there data retention policies which require on-site or long-term data archives for the server? As long-term agreements are not common with popular IaaS providers, they're typically the customer agreements are kind of as use or maybe a year. There's really no guarantee that they will continue to offer the service for a required retention time. So if you have data that needs to be stored for a while, there's really no guarantee that the providers will be continuing to offer the server. And in addition, providers don't have published retention policies on their end. So if you get into a situation where your service is suspended for whatever reason, there may be challenges in retrieving records. And that was a concern that we had identified. And finally, does the server need to be connected to peripheral devices or storage area network? This is basically due to that you don't have access to the hardware. There's no physical access to a server running in the cloud. So if you have some need where you need to physically connect something to the server, or that server needs to connect to a storage area network or something else in your environment, whether it's a peripheral device, or simply you need an attached keyboard to do some sort of local console access. Any server that requires physical access is really not a good candidate for the cloud. So those are the main questions in the decision tree. And as I said, kind of answering yes to any of those questions, you might want to reconsider whether that would be a good candidate for the cloud. However, if you do look at your servers and determine that there are a number that would be good candidates, we also came up with kind of a series of metrics that I think that other schools could kind of customize to their own needs that may be of use in determining, okay, this system is a good candidate for the cloud. Is there a cost benefit? What types of things should we be looking at? So the CSI team in doing this research, we reviewed 265 servers in one of Dartmouth's data centers. And going through the decision tree, we determined that 64 met the criterion. That we answered no to all those questions, and we could now look at the metrics to see, is there a cost benefit? Would it make sense to host some of these servers with an IaaS provider? So one of the first things is cost. When you have a server in your data center, you have hardware costs, you have environmental costs of power and air conditioning and just the rack space and everything that goes along with that. So there's just some general considerations to kind of map out before as you're doing an assessment. Based on the way that the IaaS providers charge, and kind of, how you might calculate things in-house. So, we looked at things like, well, what are the server sizing needs for this particular application or this particular server? Specifically, memory, RAM, processing, and storage, because that's typically how the costs are going to be charged from the IaaS provider. We also tried to figure out what our, we don't typically think of our in-house systems from a cost perspective on a monthly basis. And to compare, be able to compare them to the cloud, we had to kind of come up with some of those numbers. What's the monthly cost for a server of a particular size? And we came up with those monthly costs for a standalone server, for a virtual server. We have we do a lot of virtualization here at the college. So would the cost be to a monthly cost of hosting a system in our virtual environment? And then what would the cost be at some of the popular cloud providers? Again, looking at, RAM, CPU, storage needs. And kind of the third big factor is, again, one that we don't typically think about when we're doing in-house server storage, and that is the server runtime requirements. Does the server need to run 24/7? Or is a few hours a day fine? Or is it a server that's really serving an application that's only used 1 week out of the month? These cloud offerings become much more attractive if the server does not need to run 24/7. As an example, we looked through our data center and determined that we had a server that we really only use 1 week a month. It runs a process, it sits idle for 3 weeks, and then 1 week out of the month we use it. Our current dedicated server, it's not running in a virtual environment currently. It's a dedicated server. We determine that just the hardware cost alone is about $145 a month. You add, backup, power, cooling to that, it's going to be even higher. Now, we figured if we move it to a Dartmouth virtual machine, that would significantly reduce our cost, and we would be looking at $24 a month. If we ran that in the cloud, so with one of the popular cloud providers, if we hosted it in the cloud for 5 days, which is how long we would need it for, it would only be $12 a month. So we can see in this environment, in this particular situation, because the server's not running 24/7, it would be half the price, having it in the cloud compared to running it in our virtual environment. But what's interesting is that same server, if it was running a different application and needed to be running all month long in the cloud, it would cost us $60 a month compared to 24 having it on our virtual machine. So this was also very informative to us because it made us realize the value of our virtual environment. And again, different schools might be different, but it's a worthwhile exercise. And for us, it showed us that further investment or further movement towards using virtual machines may make a lot of economic sense, certainly for those systems that need to run all month long. But as I said, for those servers that don't need to be run 24/7, there may be some real cost advantages to using a cloud provider. So another area we looked at in terms of figuring out cost is storage. What are the costs of storage? Because the IaaS providers charge a per gigabyte monthly storage fee. So we need to account for those, when we're determining the total cost of housing a server in the cloud. So again, you kind of need to figure out, what amount of storage do you need. Again, you have to do some calculations because we don't typically think of our in-house storage in terms of gigabytes per month So we had to do some calculations there to figure that out. There's additional handling fees for out-of-band uploads to the cloud, and then there's backups too. So kind of looking at how much are we paying for in-house backups versus backups in the cloud. Backups in the cloud typically are just taking snapshots. So, depending on how many backups you want to have for an a particular server, you may need two, three, four times the amount of storage so that you can keep snapshots, of the storage and of the server, multiple copies of it to have backups available. Another consideration is bandwidth costs. The IaaS providers also charge for bandwidth usage, both inbound and outbound. In general, moving servers into the cloud means that more network traffic is going to cost an institution's internet connection. So if we're moving servers out of our data center into the cloud, if we assume that most of the users of those systems are on campus, that all their requests to and from that server are now going to be traversing our internet connection. So there's a bandwidth consideration there, and again, different schools might have it may be different for different schools depending on what they're paying for bandwidth, what types of connections they have. And at the same time, the IaaS providers charge for bandwidth. So not only are we increasing the bandwidth utilization of our internet connection, we are also now having to pay the providers for bandwidth usage. The only time where it really can be cheaper to have a system in the cloud is if there's a server in your data center now that is mostly accessed from the internet. So it's mostly external users coming in. By moving that out into the cloud, now the users are coming from the internet into the cloud provider, and it's never crossing your internet connection. But you're still paying that bandwidth charge to the provider. We did some calculations, and for us, and again, every school is going to be different. And again, thinking of our bandwidth in terms of, gigabytes as opposed to, you typically think of bandwidth as gigabits per second, and you pay a monthly charge or an annual charge. The way the IaaS providers charge per gigabyte of actual transferred data. So we had to do some calculations to figure out, how much are we really paying to move a gigabyte or for the capacity to move a gigabyte. But we looked at it, and in those instances where we have a server in campus, moving it out that's mostly accessed from the outside, moving it into the cloud was the only scenario where it could possibly ch be cheaper to have it in the cloud. We determined that a server, the bandwidth costs are only lower in the cloud, or only, will only be cheaper in the cloud if a server uses three times more internet bandwidth than internal. So if we have a server that's in our data center now, and three times the amount of traffic that it sees is coming from the outside, moving that into the cloud, it could potentially be cheaper because now that traffic is not crossing our internet connection. It's, we looked at 650 servers. We looked at traffic analysis or flow data for 650 servers, and only 4% met that ratio. So only 4% of those 650 servers would it be cheaper from a bandwidth perspective to store it in the cloud. It's a very low percentage. And on top of that, the cost savings were really negligible. So we had one server that was almost exclusively used from users on the internet, and moved a fair amount of data. By putting that into cloud, we would only save about $2 a month. And most of those servers that we identified where we could save a little bit of money, it was less than 50 cents. It was a really small amount. So bandwidth is an interesting thing to look at, and really is going to depend on the institution. What your internet connectivity is like. From a cost perspective, there's really no benefit to moving it out into the cloud, when you're talking about potential cost savings because of the charges that they apply. And finally, the as I alluded to already, kind of the one of the big issues with hosting servers in the clouds are the risks associated with them. And as we kind of already discussed with the decision tree questions, having a server in the cloud, there's risks. So when we're doing an analysis and looking at, okay, the storage is going to cost this much, the server costs are this much, and bandwidth costs are this much. When you look at that cost-benefit equation, there's the ultimate question of, okay, we might be able to save this much money, but is it worth it? With those risks that we've kind of already identified, is it still worth it moving it into the cloud? And in many cases, the answer is going to be yes. You're going to have, test systems, development systems, research systems that may not be handling sensitive data. Systems used for faculty or student projects that may only be need to be up for 3 months or 6 months at a time. There's certainly a lot of areas that we've identified where there could be some value here. So, even when there is a cost advantage to moving a server to the cloud, the administrators, you have to reconsider factors such as the security concerns, the legal issues, where that data is being stored and how things are being moved around. Are there retention issues, and availability requirements? Even if it's not a mission-critical application or service, does that need to be available, and can you run the risk of hosting it somewhere else where you don't have a guaranteed control over the availability of that systems? So that's pretty much this decision tree and the metrics that we came up with. Again, these cloud offerings are a very innovative and potentially beneficial resource for institutions of higher ed. For Dartmouth, the assessment methods and these decision-making tools that the CSI team developed, they've been very useful in determining the value of these offerings and identifying servers that we could migrate to the cloud. And we hope that that this approach is useful to others, and we think that it could be easily modified to produce relevant results for institutions of all types and sizes. So thank you for your time, and I hope it was helpful.